WSLR, LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota, and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Tuesday, December 16th. New College will host a public hearing on its 2025 campus master plan update tomorrow. The hearing Wednesday begins at 2 p.m. at the Harry Sudakoff Conference Center on the airport side of the campus in North Sarasota. You can provide input in person via Zoom or via email at campusmasterplan@ncf.edu. For more information, go to ncf.edu. To be sure, the new college plan seems to be a moving target. For one, critics say the college administration violated its own plan last year when it turned part of the Uplands Preserve into sports facilities. Also, the governor's budget proposal includes funding for a takeover of the neighboring USF Sarasota Manatee campus by New College. If adopted by the legislature in the upcoming session, that takeover could alter the master plan. Rob Reiner, the actor, comedian, and film director who was found dead together with his wife in his Los Angeles home Sunday, was scheduled to appear in Sarasota. The Ringling College Town Hall series had Reiner in its lineup for a presentation March 9th. L.A. police announced yesterday that it will turn over a double homicide case against Rob Reiner's son. The district attorney's office will then consider filing charges against the suspect. Thousands of customers of Tampa Electric, also known as TECO, want to sue their utility for price gauging, WUSF reported. An online petition on change.org has more than 6,500 signatures. Petition starter Robert Littlejohn wrote it is, quote, unacceptable that TECO has increased prices without any noticeable improvement in service or infrastructure. The average bill for TECO customers next year will be 82% higher than 5 years ago. The petitioners are urging Governor Ron DeSantis, Agriculture Commissioner Wilton Simpson, and Senator Rick Scott to investigate TECO's pricing strategies. And speaking of electric utilities and Ron DeSantis, the governor appointed a former state lawmaker and utility official who eliminated the words climate change from state law to the panel that oversees utilities. This has been Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Tuesday, December 16th.
For WSLR comes from listeners like you and from Manatee Spirit Holistic Sound Studio, offering sound-based wellness experiences in Bradenton. More information is available at 941-201-0069 or at info@manateespirit.com. Good morning, everybody. This is the Healthy Living Hour, airing live every other Tuesday from 9 to 10 a.m. My name is Rebecca Acosta, acupuncture physician, and I'm your host. A huge thanks to our soundboard operator, Neil Rubido, of this morning's Melody Matrix. Our goal here is to offer a wide variety of topics and guests to better inform and educate our community on current health and wellness issues. As a disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed by hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR, its staff, nor volunteers. Further, no one here is providing any type of medical diagnosis, treatment, nor advice. Everything said here is solely for general information and to foster critical thinking. We encourage you to consult your doctor for personal medical advice. Good morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday morning here. We are live in Studio A. And I just want to say our studio line is open. And if you feel like calling, please do so. We'd love to hear from you. That number is 941-954-8636. Again, 941-954-8636. Today, during the holidays, I try to create a bit of a more meaningful program. What do we need? What brings us meaning? How do we contemplate this when the world is really going awry? 2 years ago, I did a program that was meaningful to me, and I had my 100-year-old grandfather, who plays in our family band that isn't known at all, but I got to air some of his music as he plays the harmonica on over the airwaves at 100. He's 101, and he says, let's do it again this October, so we will get there. But anyway, I wanted to share this topic. It's a little tough to talk about, but I think it's so necessary out there. And for those of you, those people who are more in my inner circle, many of them are aware that almost 5 years ago, I experienced the loss of a child. My son died in a plane crash. He was a pilot. And, it was 2021. We were just in the throes of COVID. And it's only come about recently that I feel comfortable on talking about this. And it's so common. There's a lot of people going through grief, loss, whatever that is. It can be family estrangement. And I've had some of these show up in my own life. And sometimes the holidays, while everybody else is celebrating, it's difficult for many of us. So today's show, I'd like to talk about this, kind of maybe how to navigate through the holidays when we're experiencing grief, loss, or family estrangement. And so with that, I have with us live here two guests. I have Dr. Jacqueline Roller, who's a doctorate in psychology, and I have Reverend Barbara Brownyard, who's been on my program a couple years ago. And, she focuses on mindfulness, meditation. She's a published author. And I'll just let them share a little more about themselves. Dr. Roller or Dr. Jackie, would you?
Thank you for inviting me. I'm a clinical psychologist here in Sarasota, and I think I want to share, given that we're talking about grief and self-care, my dissertation was on Tai Chi. So anything you can do like yoga, Tai Chi, anything like that's helpful. My specialty areas include family systems, working with trauma and grief.
Oh, thank you. And Barbara.
Good morning, everybody. I am Reverend Barbara Brownyard. I am an interfaith minister. And my book is on meditation. It's called Sitting in the Silence. I've taken pictures of benches over the years, and I hooked them together with a meditation for each one. So that's my go-to, is meditation. I always find myself in the afternoon putting on my earphones, my little ear pods, and taking a little time off for myself, and that usually helps me a lot.
Well, thank you both for being here today. Let's just dive on in, shall we? I shared a little bit of my personal experience, and I think when we go through these things, I'd like to back it up a bit. Prior to my son passing away a number of years before that, we just come from this simple German Scandinavian small town community, tight family, lots of longevity. I knew my grandparents, most of my great grandparents growing up. And then maybe about 6 or 7 years ago, we experienced a breakup of that kind of family structure where one of my siblings, his whole family basically cut everybody, all of us off, and we haven't really spoken to him. I remember going through it. It was such a shock, especially for my mother. And I literally, She aged like 10 years in just a year's time. I saw it just really, it injured her spirit. It crushed her. And we were all in a state of shock. And then I, you know, after being able to contemplate this a bit, I just kind of said to myself, well, I'll be darned, you probably used a different word, that if that I'm going to give my children, my grown children, that control over my life to impact me in that way, no matter what happens if they do that. And so sure enough, you know, I'm experiencing this too. And it's tough and it's clunky. And, you know, I know for me with my son, who's just has chosen not to talk with me for, you know, the better part of these past 5 years. And I don't know why. And we haven't been able to have that conversation, you know, and it's hard every a birthday or, you know, like Christmas, like, gosh, what do I do? Do I send him a card? What's the right thing for me to do? And I don't always have clarity on that. I don't know. Do I send a card? Do I send a gift? You know, I just don't know. And so I think these are some of the things that I'd love for the three of us to discuss and just really get your insight on. And, you know, Barbara, if I can share, I know you have firsthand experience with much of this as well.
Yes, I haven't seen my grandchildren in over 5 years, and neither have their mother seen them, which is heartbreaking. They used to live in the same town, and thankfully she moved away this year. But it's been rough not knowing what's going on. But I text my grandchildren. They don't respond, or sometimes they respond with not very nice language. Oh. But recently I sent them some money for Christmas and just said, this is gas money, and do with it what you want. I love you. I miss you. And that's all I can do. I just send love bombs out to them and hopefully... But it's hard looking at the old pictures of the kids when they're growing up, and they live with us for 4 years, and I know they still know who we are, but their father has poisoned them against us. So we're dealing with it a day at a time, and just have hope that someday they'll come around and remember who we are and how much we love them. That's all we can do.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Jackie. Do you have any?
I would just add to that, death is to be expected, but these kinds of family rifts, they're hard to deal with because you feel so powerless, and yet the person's still alive. And so you know they're out there, and I often say to especially parents or grandparents to remember that child remembers what you were as grandmother and parent when they were little, and they will likely come back around. It may be years, but that's the hope I hold out.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see. So,
there's a question, too, of when do you reach out? You know, how... You're in your mind, you're in your head, you're kind of thinking, gosh, if I reach out, maybe it's too soon, maybe I'll be rejected. But there has to come a time where you pull the trigger and pick up that phone. That phone can feel so heavy, but you have to get through it and call these people, don't you think?
I would say either a phone call. Texting, I think, can be dangerous because language, 6% of it is what we say.
Mm.
Everything else is body language, tone, and I think that's so important. So if they're willing to have a phone conversation, that's better because you're getting the voice inflection, you're getting the tone. But if they're not there yet, in a situation I was in, I just continued sending Christmas cards, birthday cards. And when you talk about rejection, too, I think if that happens, try not to personalize it. And remember, they are going through something. We might not know what it is, but oftentimes it's not about you. And that's a tough one to work through.
Yeah, that is a tough one because what did I do? What did I do wrong? What could this possibly be about? Especially, you know, when you're left with no answers and we start overthinking or fantastical thinking. That just isn't real, and that's just a tough thing to rein in as well.
It is, and so much of it comes from past experience. There's stuff that they went through as kids, you know, especially with when you're an adult, and they conjure up these things that you did and catastrophize it, and, you know, it could be just something that they just want to flip over. So, but with the kids, I know that they're older now. They're in their teens, excuse me. They're 19 and 17, and I know that they'll come out of it as they become more mature in their thinking and as adults, young adults.
Yeah, and, you know, you bring up a good point too, Barbara. I know, like, kids don't come with an owner's manual. We get a car, it has an owner's manual. You get a baby, you're kind of on your own. You know, you're figuring it out step by step. And, you know, sadly, many of us learn from our mistakes, you know, and we're not perfect parents, but we, you know, we do the best I can. But I remember, you know, being in my early 20s back when I knew everything, you know, I'm joking, but don't we think that when we're about that age, we're smarter than them, you know, they're doing it all wrong. And then we have kids. And it's like, oh my goodness, what is the right, you know, so it's kind of after getting through some of that, it's like shown me a lot of empathy and sympathy for my parents. And I had a good childhood and, you know, and I'm regretful of some of the ways I talked to or treated them, mm-hmm. you know, or maybe some times of, you know, not calling them and, you know, testing them, whatever that is. But that, I think that's the thing is, you know, babies don't come with owner manuals. We're, you know, we're just doing our best, learning as we go.
You've got me thinking of the whole idea of the good enough parent in family systems. And so for me, even personally, I remember the point where my mother had just passed away and my dad and I were sitting on the porch, and he was talking to me about his childhood. And it really helped me understand the family system he came out of. And I often say to my patients, you know, you can blame your parents. Your parents can blame their parents. They can blame their parents. And so I say, as young adults, if you're struggling with your parents and not speaking to them, or as parents, the best way to heal is to kind of go through your own childhood, and you don't need to beat up your parents to do that. Because we all came out of a family system of struggles. And I do believe every parent, I haven't met a perfect one yet, but I know they love their children and they're doing the best they can.
Yeah.
That's true. And I see families that go to maybe 12-step programs, adult children, and all this stuff comes conjuring up in their brains, and they flip, and they say, I have to have my own life, you know. But it's still, they're still children when you think of it that way.
Yeah, isn't it? They're like frontal lobes of our brains where we do all that processing and thought and personality stuff, and that's not even developed fully till we're in our mid to late 20s. You know, so it's a tough time.
I'm still developing in my 70s.
Me too, Barbara. But yeah, and I think I should back this up a bit too. I'd like to point out my partner Roger's here, and you know, if I can share this, you know, we just really kind of got our crust tested, I say, at that 2021-2022. Tanner passed away in February 21, and then a year and a half later, his youngest died by suicide, and we were both in a state of shock, and even though he's not my birth son, I loved that kid. And, that's a whole nother thing. And I felt so spared with what I was going through. 'Cause to me, that was just gazillion times harder. You know, you're left with, oh my gosh, that you remember that last conversation, and what could I have said that could have pivoted that into a different outcome? You know, and I'm still haunted by that. And I live with that. And it's not easy.
Go ahead. I know the fentanyl crisis. Yeah. My daughter had many friends that passed away. And they didn't want to die. And no kids don't want to die. But what the family goes through afterwards is tragic. And hard to close up that hole in your heart that child left.
I like the way you named your children. I think one of the things that I always think of with death is one of the first deaths of somebody kind of around my age was some neighbors of ours, very close family, and their son Donald died at 16 of cancer. He died at 21. I was 16 when he passed away. And I remember going over to his mom's house 6 years later and sitting at the table. And I said, Mrs. Mayfield, I don't know if I should say Donald's name, but I'm thinking about him a lot. I know his birthday was December 6th. And she started crying. And this was a real lesson for me. And she thanked me. She said, I feel like everybody's afraid to mention Donald's name. And so during this holiday season, I would really encourage our listeners to do that. Don't be afraid to mention the name. If you find the person kind of pulls away, then honor that. But it was a profound statement. And she was a little Italian lady, just the sweetest lady you would ever want to meet. And I remember her saying, I feel like Donald's finally here again. And we talked about memories. And I think memories can be such balm for the soul. So my advice would be, don't be afraid to mention the deceased's names. And I think people really shy away when it's death by suicide.
Yeah, I think that's been a little bit of our experience. I know even for me, and tying into losing a child, like, and there's we just got through the pandemic, and all of us, we know somebody. Or know somebody who had a family member who passed away from this, you know. And I kind of after Tanner died, I thought, wow, you know, this child loss. It, like, I think losing a parent, we almost expect it. You know, that's part of that life death cycle. But it's in a more of a natural order, you know. And to me, this bereavement for parents when they go through this, it seems just out of order. You know, it just doesn't seem like, why did this happen? But, I think, too, I know in my experience, I had a very good friend, one of my best friends. And, you know, she was an only child. She had an only child, and we were really close. And I think when Tanner left, she tried to be there, and she was amazing, because you're just in shock and you're just going through the motions and you don't even know which end is up. But about 5 or 6 months, like it was too hard for her. I think it was too hard. So I lost one of my best friendships, mm-hmm. because, you know, and not for no wrongdoing, I think it was just too tough for her. You know, because it's a mirror, like, oh my gosh, what if this happened to me? Maybe. I don't know. And it's like I had a couple losses.
Right.
With that.
You know, I think that's what Mrs. Mayfield was saying to me. Like, she was alone in her grief because I think often it is that people just don't know if it's okay to open it up. So it's hard because it makes the grief even greater. You mentioned COVID. I think I want to, just if I can turn a little bit to a concept called anticipatory grief. So as we're in the holidays and we know we're going to be at our table with loved ones missing, whether it's because by choice or death, you took me back to COVID and Thanksgiving during COVID. And the anticipatory grief of people weren't able to travel, who's going to be with us. It was one of the most profound Thanksgivings I think I've had. We had an empty chair. And during that meal, if you will, different people that had gone, but most of them were already deceased, but were at that table that day. And it's like there was a different person at that chair, metaphorically speaking, and all these wonderful memories of Thanksgiving's past. So, again, I encourage people to kind of have those memories of who that person was, and maybe set a place setting for the person you're missing and see how that seat gets filled during that meal. I think you'll be surprised.
Wow, I might attempt to try that this year. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Jackie.
That's a great thing to think about, Jackie. And I have a Facebook page of all my cousins, and we have great we share memories and pictures of going up to our grandmother's house in Poughkeepsie and the great times we had, moving up from the kids' table to the adults' table, as you grow, and just sharing pictures too. It's really wonderful to share.
Yeah, and again, if you're just joining us, this is the Healthy Living Hour, and we're talking about navigating through the holidays and through other times of celebration while we're in our own time of grief, loss, or estrangement with family. And I'm here with Dr. Jacqueline Roller, Doctorate of Psychology, and Reverend Barbara Brownyard. And our studio lines are open if you have any questions while we're here this morning or you have anything you'd like to share. We'd love to hear from you. That number is 941-954-8636. Please call if you would like. And, what else can we bring to this? I think, not to make it so heavy, I think we all have the capacity. Oh, Neil, I lost. Oh, there we are. I think we all truly have the capacity to transform something. Like there's two sides of the same coin, heads, tails. And, I'm in this tails time of year, whatever. How can I transform that into something positive? How can I find the beauty and the holiness and that sacredness in it of this thing we call life? We have this one precious life. What are we doing with it? And I think how to turn some of these into a positive in our lives, or how to make something good out of them. And, I just thought of this. So my great grandmother, she came through Ellis Island from Hungary, I believe. And, they settled in the Chicago area, and she's part of the reason I got into medicine. She, they just had a lot of babies, and I believe she was had a sickly little baby, and because they were very poor, they sat there and they couldn't get care at the clinic or the hospital, and that baby died. And I think she buried a 12-year-old son. She buried a baby, and I heard these stories, but she was the cook at the school. She cooked, back when there was no processed food. You had these cooks that would cook everything, But, I don't remember her being sad or talking about this. Like, I think back then, and I don't know, I'm just assuming that they just had to carry it. They had to just, they had to carry it with them, and maybe they didn't have, it's so different now. We have psychologists and licensed mental health counselors, and we have people we can talk to about this. And I don't know what they did. I don't know how they worked through that. And I imagine they likely just suffered a lot in silence.
Unless they had other women that are going through the same thing in the community, but
right.
They probably didn't open up. And that's what I think that we have is our places where we could open up and share our our problems, share our grief. We have a grief support at Venice Unity, and we had a wonderful ceremony last week, and with great music and, you know, a candlelight ceremony, and that really brings people together as they mourn and cry and get it out. It really is good to get it out.
Yeah, it's important to. I remember I was working out of an office down in Osprey when this happened, you know, when my son died. I was renting a space from a colleague, and, you know, like maybe just 6 months before, as I was cleaning up and leaving there for the day, she was there painting. It was an art studio. She was an acupuncturist and a lovely artist. And, you know, she just opened up and told me about, you know, her son dying of suicide here in Bradenton. You know, she found him. And she kind of just, she was talking, and I just sat there with such reverence, like, wow, thank you for trusting me with this. I was just kind of, I didn't know what to do. You know, I had no frame of reference, none whatsoever. But we talked, and she's like, you know, thank you. We need to get it outside of ourselves. We need to get it out of us.
When you say outside of us, ourselves, I think, and you were saying, you know, this is kind of a very down topic. I think one of the ways oftentimes I find to lighten it up is to do volunteering. There's a lot of organizations looking for help, and I'm Catholic, and the Catholic Church has a million feast days, and I always say whatever the day is that you think is the only day to celebrate, it's a movable feast. So what I've learned in recent years, somewhere around the holidays I have a bonfire, I celebrate with friends that way. We're in the season of Hanukkah. Maybe connect with some of your Jewish friends and find out more about their holiday. Kwanzaa. You know, I think there's all kinds of ways to get out of ourselves and kind of move the feast, if you will.
That's beautiful.
It's very true. That's a very good suggestion.
Yeah, and I think, too, like, you know, I'm sorry, we're just talking about heavy topics, and it's one that just kind of hits the heart a little more. And, but, you know, with family and friends, and yeah, please say their name for any, like, those of us, that's a thing, like, people avoid, and we want to hear their name. We want to hear our kids' names. Jackie, can you talk about this song?
Oh. Hallelujah. No. This is one of my favorite during the holidays. That'd be great.
Is this the right one?
Yeah, it's Cohen, Leonard Cohen's song. I think it will really be good balm for the soul on this topic.
This one is by the U.S. Air Force Academy Choir, or Academy Band. I'm not sure if this is the one you wanted.
I don't think this is
great.
The one.
This is great. It's the Air Force Choir, and they're singing Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah. And really what that means is even in our grief, even in our hardest times, we still find a way to utter hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Life is good.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Oh, so while we're finding the right song, sorry about that, Neil. I got put you on the spot on that one. He'll look for the right one. Yeah, it's not the chorus. It's the Leonard Cohen song. But it'll be there somewhere.
You know, one of the things when I was driving here this morning and thinking about grief, I was talking to a woman who's trying to get gifts for children. And the holiday season, especially, I don't know if it's so much with the Jewish Hanukkah. I don't know. I'm a little ignorant in that area. But with Christmas, as a school teacher years ago, everybody comes back, what you get? What you get? And it was like everybody wanted to know. And I think that can be a real time of grief. And again, it's a movable feast. So if you know children that may not be getting what they would hope for on Christmas Day, neighbors, family members, don't be afraid to give them a gift before school starts still, even if it's after Christmas. You know, and they're great sales then, and they're going to go to school and somebody's going to say, what you get? And they're going to show that gift that you gave them maybe on December 29th.
Oh, that's sweet.
That's a great idea. And I visit hospice patients down here, and I'm very involved with the elderly who maybe have no one to visit them.
Yeah.
So I bring a little cheer to them and pray with them and, you know, give them a little comfort. I just learned something called caring touch that is very helpful. And, you know, ask somebody to help you with caring touch if you need it.
Yeah, and I think, too, that's the thing. Like, it seems like society and life is just going faster and faster, and we're just bombarded with all this to-do stuff and the busyness. And, you know, I know for me, I feel like I heal in my times of solitude. Some people need to be around other people. You know, maybe that's their medicine, or, you know, keeping your mind off things. You know, I want to digest this and really, you know, how can I make this a meaningful experience? How can I honor that individual? How can I be so grateful that I got to be his mom for the short time I was? And, you know, how can I just make him so proud?
Yes. To bless his memory.
How to bless his memory. Yeah. That's a better way of saying it.
Yeah,
thank you.
It's in the Jewish tradition, they say, may his memory be a blessing. I love that.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Very important.
Thank you. And, you know, too, and I think, too, like, you know, it's hard. I'll be, you know, I go to my mother's. She's up in the Palm Harbor area. It's a little drive. And we go for these holidays, and the holidays are forever changed going forward. They're just, and anything can forever change that, but they're just a time of, it's hard. You show up and you go through the motions, but oftentimes I just want to be home alone. I want the quiet. I want a little bit of music. You know, music is medicine. It's a true medicine. And, you know, but we still have to go. You still have to show up for your family. You have to show up for your other kids. You have to show up for your other family members.
When you say sometimes you want to just be home alone, my advice would be don't be afraid to do that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes being home is being home to self. And so you may take some time and just say, you know, what do I really need this holiday season, especially with so many political differences and what we're living in? I think it's easy to say, well, I need to show up. But do we? And I just really would recommend for people to just take some meditation time and just say, you know, what do I really need in order to be home to my very inner self this holiday season? And it may be you don't show up this holiday, and that's okay.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, because we just kind of, we try to do what we feel we have to do. And, you know, sometimes it's an obligation.
We do and do and do.
We do and do and do.
And you
yeah.
can get into the frantic season, which is not really necessary at all. Last Sunday, I took a walk on the beach by myself. And that's, to me, a walking meditation and just being in nature, going to Oscar Scherer and listening to the birds, just being at home with yourself. That's a wonderful concept, Jackie. I love that.
Yeah, that is. And Barbara, like, what have, like, I know some of the things I feel I've learned in going, navigating this. And, you know, I think for me, and you brought up the word, the fentanyl overdose crisis that we have, and it's such a big problem. And I know after Tanner passed, you know, I found a group. Somebody must have told me about it, and it's the Compassionate Friends, you know, and it's a special support, grief support group for those parents who've lost a child, even an adult child, you know.
That's
just
great.
Those who went home somewhere before them. And Roger and I have gone a couple of times. I don't think they have a meeting. It's usually the third Tuesday evening of the month at the YMCA on Euclid from, I think, 6 to 8 p.m. And it's beautiful. And for me, after kind of getting through a year and a half of it, I thought, okay, I feel I'm in a better place. What do I do with this? The best thing I can do with this experience and is try to help somebody else, be there for somebody who's newly going through something. And it's hard. It's so heavy to be there. And you try to just, you know, share encouragement that you will get through this. It's not easy. You're not alone. And, I've really found that. But honestly, these past 4 years of attending this Compassionate Friends things, there is a lot. Most of the newer people there these past few years, their kids died of fentanyl or an overdose. I mean, it's so, and nobody really knows about it, or we're not really talking about it.
No, it's an epidemic. It really,
it's an epidemic.
It's horrendous.
And you know, just seeing these parents, we know what they're going through. You know, our circumstances are different, but we know what that is, and our hearts just hurt for them, and we just try to be there for them.
We have to be. And I found a group for grandparents of estranged children too. Mm-hmm. And parents of estranged children. That's been very helpful to me. Sometimes it's tough to listen to the stories. I can't always identify with what they've been through, but my daughter hooked me onto them, and she really gets a lot out of it.
Is that like a social media, like a Facebook group, a closed group, or
social media?
Closed, yeah, I believe my mom is in that too.
Mm, good.
And then they do vet. They vet you and make sure, you know. I remember the questions were pretty. Yeah, when you go to join, you know, to try to really protect the privacy of who is in that group. And I think that's maybe one of the positive things I found for, you know, social media. Like, there's negatives and positives, and that is one of the positives. Like, you know, I found grief groups. You know, there's all these groups that you can join, you know, to just, you know, build community and develop community. And I think we need a little more of that.
You mentioned fentanyl and addictions a couple times now, and I think too to remember with the holiday season, it's a mental illness, and I think there's such judgment around it. And to remember that, you know, the person that's drinking alcohol probably has a co-occurring anxiety disorder with it. And so if we can try to just remember that everybody is trying to cope, and with that, with addictions, and I think our healthcare system is starting to look at it more as co-occurring, because it's a form of self-medicating. These folks are in a lot of pain, and so are their family members. And if we can kind of hold that, I think we're going to be able to support each other better.
Yeah, indeed. You know, do you have, so let's, like, we kind of addressed what's going on and how it's so endemic, and there's a lot of people going through hard times and all sorts of hard times, you know. Jackie, if I can share this, sorry, I hope I am okay to say this and not embarrass you, but, you know, we go to that Sunday afternoon Payne Park, 4 to 5 o'clock Payne Park, that interfaith based, where we pray in solidarity with those throughout the people that are at that alligator Alcatraz, and we pray with the indigenous that stand there each Sunday from 4 to 5 in solidarity with them. And it's just a beautiful group of people, and I'm loving that community. And different ministers share something each week. There's music, and we share and we encourage, and we collect food for our immigrant family here who, you know, are too afraid to go out, are food insecure, you know, maybe a parent was picked up by ICE and are detained and they don't know where they are, and that might have been the breadwinner. And we have another programmer here, Ruth of The Ruthless Truth, and she's just doing amazing work with that community. And, you know, we're getting Christmas gifts, food. You know, you, Dr. Jackie, have been helping a homeless family, a mom and two young adult kids, that we encountered through that event, through that space.
I'm glad you mentioned that. There's an organization, El Pueblo Unido, that has been coming on Sundays, and they're collecting for these families that are literally hiding out in their homes. And their simple goal is that each person gets a gift, and they're having a hard time, especially with teenage boys. So at the end of the show, I'll put my phone number out there. If you want to text me, I can help that organization. And I think what's so powerful for me is just the power of what I call universal love. So we are out there with different churches at the same time that indigenous people are standing outside of the Alcatraz in the Everglades. And that's powerful. And I think that's something, again, that can help any of us that are grieving at this point to get involved in these kinds of efforts.
Yeah, and you know, they're going through a whole other, you know, set of circumstances that are just, I can't even wrap my head around what they're going through. Oh, Roger would like to share something.
Yeah, hi, Roger here, and I just wanted to share a little bit about this subject in regards to community. As we try to process the grief, Rebecca mentioned that my son Daniel had passed 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago, and just doing, as she mentioned, this vigil where we are in community, where we're trying to support others who are going through grief themselves. I mean, I can't imagine coming to this country, working hard in the fields on construction, and then to have, you know, the person that's is financing the company to just disappear. The grief that they are experiencing, they're going through right now. And, you know, I'm hoping that what we can do is, you know, during this season especially, to be a community where we support others in what they're going through. And for me, that helps me process grief this time, you know, in this season. And I just also wanted to mention, circle back to, you know, when I lost my son, I did lose a lot of close friends that didn't know how to respond. And I knew that that's what it was. I knew that they weren't, you know, not communicating with me because they were fearful about, you know, their own children. That it was just they didn't know how to process or how to be with me in that time. And that's okay. It's okay. And there's one other thing that I wanted to share, which is Rebecca talked about Facebook groups, and I have been on the different groups that are like parents who have lost a child or parents who have lost a child through suicide, and they've been extremely helpful processing the grief as we move forward. And you know, I'm just really grateful to have this opportunity to share with you all. And one of the things that I come up with is there's a comment by a gentleman that says grief is love unfinished. And I know that my son loves me and I love him. And that's how I, you know, work towards processing this grief, that it's just love unfinished on this earth. But, you know, it's okay. And I'll turn it back to Rebecca.
Thank you, Roger.
It goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah.
Thank you, Dr. Jackie, for suggesting that song. And thank you so much for suggesting that song. Sorry, guys, we're just clunking around a little, getting used to the new soundboard and such. So,
you're good.
But anyway,
you are broadcasting.
And I think that's such a powerful thing, you know, this song. And Dr. Jackie, you have a profound experience in your past. Can you share that with the working with the Somalia refugees? And I know they're just so under target.
Sure. I was sharing at the break that when I lived and worked in Minneapolis, I worked with asylum seekers from Somalia and heard some pretty horrendous stories of what got them to seek asylum in the United States. And what I discovered one night, I was driving home. I was whistling in the car on my way home and no radio on. And during these times, I realized I'd been whistling a lot. And what that does is two things. It helped me leave their stories at the office so that I could go home and be fully present. But I notice I'm whistling a lot these days, even in a parking lot at Walgreens. I was whistling one day, and some gentleman across the parking lot said, "You're a whistler too?" And we stood there and had this great conversation. And what I've discovered whistling can do for us, it lightens us. It's a coping strategy, and it was very unconscious for me. And it helps us breathe more deeply, because a lot of us, when we're going through stress, we literally forget to breathe. So I really want to encourage you to whistle your favorite songs. I love music, and you just opened up another memory of Elvis Presley. You know, I'll have a blue Christmas without you. That's what we're talking about this morning. And I just have noticed a lot of churches are having blue Christmas celebrations to kind of remember those that have gone before us. And I just want to put out there, the Church of the Trinity MCC on Lockwood Ridge is having a blue Christmas, believe it or not, tomorrow night at 7 p.m. So I would encourage listeners that really want to be in community, as Roger was talking about how important community is, to go to the MCC church tomorrow night on Lockwood Ridge at 7 p.m.
Thank you, Dr. Jackie. Also, you know, bringing up community, it just circles back. That is the heart of WSLR. That is the heart and spirit of Fogartyville. You know, our founders, I think they really made this to bring the community together. And boy, we need community right now more. You know, everything is on Zoom. So much business is conducted. Communication is more conducted via email and text. And like Jackie, like you brought up, yeah, we're missing these vital nonverbal cues that we really need in having, you know, good conversation with each other and that heart connection with one another that I think separates us from the animal. Well, you know, there's something about this humanness that's just so unique. On that too, Roger mentioned about, you know, the prayer group we go to, they're going to be holding Saturday, December 20th from 6 to 8 p.m. coming up here at Five Points. And we'll be doing a prayer and candlelight vigil. And we will, you know, bring signs. It's a little bit of a bring a candle. And, you know, we stand in solidarity with our brothers and sisters. We're all one. We're the same family. You know, we're the human family.
Thank you for mentioning that. That's going to be at Five Points, and it's actually part of the grief of families and immigrants being separated and disappeared. And it's going to be a powerful gathering from 6 to 8 at Five Points.
Yeah, and we're running out of time, and thank you so much, both of you, for just, you know, coming in and doing this with me and talking about some heavy things. And hopefully someone out there, you know, we hope something here blessed you today. Jackie, Barbara, do you all have any health tips imparting for getting through the holidays as we part?
The only thing I wrote down was write. If you want to write to your loved ones that are no longer here, mm-hmm. I'm a big writer, been journaling all since my teens, along with the whistling. Maybe I could do journal whistling. Write while you whistle. And that really helps. I write love letters to my grandchildren and let them know maybe someday they'll read it. And if not, that's fine because it helps me.
Oh, thank you. That's powerful. Jackie?
I would say find your community and find ways to lighten it. Even a simple thing I'm doing with two little boys down the street is they're coming home every night and they're finding a little Dollar Tree gift hanging on their light pole. And it lightens me. I thought it was for them, but I think little things to lighten it and whistle while you cope.
That's great. And you just reminded me of something. I had an opportunity to follow like a Tao master and stay in a temple for a while. And I remember him doing a talk on giving. And he said, when you give something, you have to have three forgets. You have to forget three things. You have to forget the gift, the recipient, and the giver. And so happy holidays to you all out there. Thank you again. Join us next Tuesday at this time for Julie and Jono of Our Changing Environment. And Jackie and Barbara, sorry, how can people find you if they want more information? Can you share that, please?
Well, I don't have a website anymore, but you can catch me through Rebecca.
Great. I will hook you up. And Jackie?
I'm open to being texted at 941-400-1898, especially if you would like to help out these children.